I don't want to dog the company, so I won't do that right now. I'm not talking about our company, Stu. Stu looked at me. He was like, ooh, get your popcorn ready. Here we go. That was very impromptu. Something happened two breaks ago. But I guess there is a company that sent energy drinks here to us and also down the hall. So I don't want to say the name of the company because I'll be respectful. But I'm not an energy drink guy. I never had a cup of coffee until I started doing the weekend overnights. And I wouldn't even have the coffee before the shift. I would have the coffee in the last hour of the shift because I would have to drive home after being up when I did the 2 to 6 a.m. Eastern time overnight. So I was not a big coffee drinker. Now I have a cup of coffee every day where I have a large black cold brew is what I end up getting from Starbucks. That's personally the drink of choice. And then they have a Dunkin' Donuts center here. So there will be some times as well if I need a little extra boost. If I have the large black cold brew early in the morning, then I may have a cup of hot coffee, you know, traditional coffee, black coffee, right before I do get on the air. You know, rarely will I double dip, but there are some days where I double dip. It depends how much sleep I get, quite frankly. I've never been an energy drink guy. Never have. Stu, are you an energy drink guy?
Yeah, I used to be a lot more like in my college days, and
unhealthy Stu days.
I've tried to kind of wean myself.
Fat Stu days.
Yeah, exactly. I tried to wean myself off of that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I still indulge a little, but I try not to, you know, do the everyday energy drink, which I used to do.
So I've never been really an energy drink person. I would like sometimes if I'm out, I'll have a back in the day vodka Red Bull. I could do that. But just a straight up energy drink, never really been about it. So everyone was trying these energy drinks, and a lot of people were liking the energy drinks. So I go, all right, let me try it. And Anthony Gallo goes to me,
bro, don't think you should do that when you're on the air. You don't know how you're going to react to it, bro.
So that was Anthony Gallo. So I go, shut up, Gallo. Give me the drink. So I opened up the drink. I took a sip. Didn't like it. And I'm not going to lie, after like one sip of an energy drink, I feel wired right now. I feel too energetic, and I don't need any more energy. Like, I don't need a boost of energy when it comes to the Zach Gelb show on the Infinity Sports Network. So if I feel, I don't know if it's just mentally the way I feel, because, oh, you're an energy drink, blah, blah, blah. But even Gallo was like, hey, I had like two sips, and I felt a little like wired. So I had one sip, and it was a decent size sip. And I'm not going to lie, I feel a little bit rattled right now on the radio. So we got to get through the next 2 hours of this program, Stu. I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth, quite frankly. I really don't. So it could make entertaining radio, but the energy drink, off like one sip, I'm assuming it goes away in probably like 25 minutes. But I had that about 25 minutes ago and hasn't gone away in 25 minutes. So maybe it's going to be a little longer than that. I may have to leave the show today. All right. Maybe I should have the rest of the drink, go kickstart my weekend a little bit early, end up leaving, walking out of the studio, and we'll have the Stu and Santa show for the next 2 hours. Right? That's what we should do on a Football Friday.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what the audience wants. So.
Okay. So I'll stay. Yeah, but I feel
no
weird.
More energy drinks for Zach between 3 and 6 Eastern time.
No more. No more energy drinks. Now I'm kind of like intrigued because I'm going to a Met game tonight. Do I have the rest of the energy drink after the show?
You see, I'm worried because I had about 85 to 90% of mine. And
you had one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel normal.
Normal.
So it means I'm addicted to caffeine, clearly, and I need lots of caffeine.
But you're an habitual energy drink guy.
I'm a habitual coffee drinker. Like, okay. I'll have two cups of coffee a day.
That's completely different than coffee.
I understand, but what I'm saying is, like, I don't know.
You have the palate for it.
I do, and I'll have maybe, I don't know, in a month, maybe.
You have the tolerance for it.
Yeah, maybe 3 or 4 energy drinks a month, something like that. So it's not like a daily thing, but I guess I'm used to it enough. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I'm a little worried that I have no reaction to it.
Okay. So you have no reaction. And I'm like off my rocker after a sip of it. And Gallo gave me a good scouting report. He said, hey, Manny Rodriguez and Gallup were the people consulting me, which it's like the blind leading the blind, if we're being honest. And Gallup was like, be careful, after like two sips, I felt it. And then Manny Rodriguez said, great line by Manny, I don't work out, and I feel like I could go pump some iron right now. He had a full energy drink. And I'm worried about Manny, because Manny talks very quick when he does his updates.
He does.
I don't think Manny usually talks that fast. But when he does the updates, he's like, all right, the White Sox beat this team. The White Sox, who are they beating? Let's be real.
That's a fake update, clearly.
Yeah, but that, like, he speaks very quickly when he does the updates.
He does, yes.
But now I'm thinking, did he just want to get jacked up for the updates, so he just keeps on sucking down these energy drinks? Because I just found out the energy drinks have been here today. They supposedly have been here for at least a week, and then even more than that, because they're in not the newsroom, but the cafeteria area.
Right, there's like a ton of them. You can take a whole crate home with you if you want, I'm sure.
Yeah, so I think Manny has been doing a little, I don't want to say five-finger discount because they're free, but he's been taking the energy drinks, and I think he's been pretty much chugging an energy drink maybe before every update. Because he is, man, speaking quick, very quick on those updates. Anyway, Stu, I need your evaluation on this. You are the expert this week on the Baltimore Ravens. Because your football team surprised everybody when they found a way, even when they were trailing, to come on back and beat the Ravens. So, with that being said, give me your true evaluation of the Ravens, not up against the Cowboys this week, and I'll take care of that, but where you think the Baltimore Ravens are at as a football team after your pathetic football team found a way to get the job done.
So the one thing that stood out to me when the Raiders beat them on Sunday was their offensive line just is not very good. It's not Patriots bad. It's not Raiders bad.
It can't be Patriots
bad. It can't be Patriots bad.
I don't need to be Brian Baldinger and do an evaluation of every offensive line. I don't. I know without seeing any other offensive line in football that the Patriots have the worst offensive line in football. And last night, the fact that I'm getting lectured by someone on Twitter, some fan responded to me when I said, and I had a few pops at the game. I'll admit that. I only had like a few beers. And I had a very good, you want to hear my tailgate sandwich? My best friend picked up two sandwiches. I had grilled chicken with pesto, bacon, lettuce, tomato, and we had a big bag of chips. Very good. So I had a few pops, a little something else in the parking lot as we walk into the stadium. And I was watching the game last night, and I tweet out, this is the worst offensive line I've ever seen. Now, like, you don't take everything literally on social media, but it's tough to find a worse offensive line than the Patriots. And right away I have someone, you're overreacting. Their left tackle and left guard are out. And not only that, have you seen the Giants play football as of late? And I'm like, dude, like, pump the brakes here. Even if the left tackle and left guard were there for New England last night, I know they suck as well. So this idea that I'm not allowed to say the Patriots had the worst offensive line in football, it's just classic social media. But you are not confident in the Raiders' offensive line.
The Ravens,
oh, the Ravens,
line.
Sorry, yes.
Yes, and I guess
and a lot of moving pieces, too.
A lot, and then on the other side of the ball, they just got decimated by Adams and Bowers. That was really it. The whole, like, nothing else really worked, but every time the Raiders targeted Adams and Bowers, it seemed to work. I think they combined for almost 20 receptions. Like,
okay.
They did not double cover Adams at all the whole game. They kind of let him do his thing one-on-one, and then Bowers just really ripped through the middle of the defense a lot, like, several times, so that would be my, I guess, concern. Like, could maybe, you know, some of the Cowboys' weapons lead to that? I'm not sure.
If Ferguson plays.
Yeah. So
Shoemaker.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious to see how that ends up. I mean, the Ravens, I think, are a good team. They're not an 0-2 team. I mean, they are an 0-2 team, but they're better than an 0-2 team. They're a team I expect to be.
They're not your typical 0-2 team.
Right. So I don't know. I don't know about you, but I really have a hard time seeing the Ravens this week.
So
Losing.
Okay, so based off what you're saying, this is how the Cowboys win the game. Based off your evaluation of the Ravens, this is how the Cowboys win the game. Micah Parsons, which he can be, absolute tyrant to that offensive line, and just causes havoc like he did in week one to a Cleveland Browns offensive line that is usually perceived to be a good offensive line. You have a Micah Parsons pass rush taking advantage of a Ravens offensive line that I don't know if it's weak or if it's just a lack of continuity, as there's so many new pieces in there and they haven't found that chemistry and that synergy yet. But timing is everything in the NFL. So if you think, even though what you just said about the Ravens offensive line, maybe someone else could say, oh, give them a few weeks, they'll be fine. But this is for week three. So Micah Parsons is going to have a defensive player of the year type of game.
Just like Max Crosby. Crosby had two sacks. Crosby had a rough week one against Joe Alt, but
yeah, he got owned by Joe Alt.
Week and then two, he looked totally like the Max Crosby we know with two sacks.
So the problem that even though I don't love the Ravens defense, like I think it's a solid, good defense, but not as great as potentially what it's been in years past. Who on the Cowboys, outside of CeeDee Lamb, goes and wins this game on offense? You know, out of the skill position players. And that's where I look at it. And not that the Raiders are this great football team, but the Raiders have solid skill position players. I know they don't have Josh Jacobs anymore, but you got Devontae Adams, you got Brock Bowers, you got the Mayer kid. How has he been, by the way? I know he's 2 years in out of Notre Dame.
Not great. He only has a few catches, and he honestly probably, because of Bowers, they don't
role play. Is diminished.
Bowers plays, you know, almost every snap. Sometimes they'll bring in two tight ends or put Bowers in the slot, but he really doesn't play as much. He maybe plays like 30, like 20, 25 snaps. Like it's a lot less than you would think a guy that they valued so much last year with a second round pick.
But you look at that Cowboys offense up against the Ravens defense, you know, Devontae Adams, CeeDee Lamb, similar in terms of, right, that's the star of both teams. That's the person that you expect something. The Raiders' next piece is Brock Bowers. If Brock Bowers is on the Cowboys, outside of CeeDee Lamb, he's probably the second best option there. You know, Brandon Cooks is a nice player. Ferguson banged up right now, but I'd rather have Brock Bowers than Ferguson. So you look at that. I don't think this week the Cowboys, after, right, they win week one in great fashion up against the Browns. They have a mega letdown. Mega letdown. At home, you know what it kind of reminded me of? It was worse than the playoff game last year. Because the Packers, at least, they're a playoff team. The Saints are 1-0. They beat the snot out of the Panthers. And then you allow the Saints to walk into Jerry's World and beat you. And not only beat you like a drum. They destroyed you. And the first six drives of the game, they had touchdowns for the New Orleans Saints. So I look at the Cowboys now going into this week three matchup, and I don't love Dallas, obviously, and I don't even love the Ravens. I think the Ravens have some concerns. The offensive line, like Stu has pointed out, the defense maybe being a little bit soft in the middle, but I look at the Ravens, and I got to think, Harbaugh is the better coach than McCarthy. Lamar is the better quarterback than Dak Prescott. And then I think Derrick Henry is going to start to get going this week as well. Where in the first week of the season, they used him right out of the gate and they barely used him in the second half. So if you ask me, Zach, which team do you trust more? And it's not like, oh, Dallas is home, so they have this great home field advantage. They got smacked last week by the Saints, and the last two times they've been home, they got smacked at home in the playoffs against the Packers. They got smacked by the Saints. So I'm going to say the Ravens get off the schneid this week, and the Ravens go from 0-2 to 1-2. And the Ravens' season is far from saved by doing that. But if the Ravens lose this week and they're sitting there at 0-3, their next two games are the Bills and the Bengals. That's tough. This is a big opportunity for the Ravens. You win, you get to 1-2, you split. Bills and Bengals, right? I don't think it's safe to say they'll win both. And then you sit there at 2-3, and then you go get that victory up against the Commanders, and you're 3-3 after the first six games of the season. So I'm with Stu on this one. I don't like that we're agreeing so much today, because then usually when we're both right, the other thing happens. That's like the Zach Gelb show rule. Whenever the entire show agrees, it's like shame, 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 shame. Just fade, 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 fade. That's what you need to do. That's absolutely what you need to do. But I'll take the Ravens to get the best and the better side of the Dallas Cowboys this week. That game seems like, let me ask you this. How do you like the Ravens?
I do.
But how do you like the Ravens? Like, how does this game play out, Ravens and Cowboys?
I think they use Henry more than they've used Henry so far. Establish a running game. I think Lamar makes a few big plays. I don't know. It's almost weird. It's almost like, and this is probably not great analysis, but they're 0-2. They can't be 0-3. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost like this is must win.
I think this is heartbreak.
If they lose, yeah.
No. I'm saying if you want to tell me Dallas wins or the Ravens win, whatever. I think the Ravens are going to win. I just think the ending is going to be like heartbreak fashion, like final 2 minutes, someone drives down the field, puts the ball in the end zone, or one of the quarterbacks makes a mistake or someone fumbles the ball. Like, I think this is going to be low 20s, 24-20, like somewhere like that, 23-20, 24-20, and late in the game, there's just dysfunction that occurs. Because Lamar, not that this is a playoff game, but in the playoff games, there's been dysfunction. Dak, playoff games, dysfunction. Like the way that those games ended against San Francisco, couldn't get the snap off, even when the defense kept on making plays, turnover machine. It just seems like whoever loses this game, there's one thing to lose in the league, and then there's another thing for it to be a dysfunctional, heartbreaking loss. I think this is one of those rip your heart out for a week three, all things considered, type of ending in this one. So I'll take 24-20, Stu, and I'll rock and roll with the Baltimore Ravens in this one. It is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. 5 things to watch this weekend in college football. We'll do that next. All righty, let's do 5 things to watch this weekend in college football. We will start tonight with Go Big Red! Go Big Red! As you have Nebraska and Illinois, you have a top 25 matchup here. Nebraska 22 in the country, and Brett Bielema, who I like a lot, has Illinois at 24th in the country. I think this game is going to be closer than what Vegas says. So I saw this spread earlier in the week at like 7, and then it went up to 8. It's now at 8.5. Don't get me wrong. I think Nebraska wins the game. If Nebraska wins this game by more than 8.5 points, though, that's like a big deal for Nebraska, and it shows what type of team they have. Now, I think Nebraska, I said before the year started, well before the year started, I thought they were an 8-win football team, potentially a 9-win football team. And now everyone's like, oh yeah, that's like maybe a little bit low for Nebraska. But Nebraska has a kick-ass defense going back to last year. I watched every game of Nebraska last year. Tony White has a phenomenal defense. He should have been a head coach. And this year, that defense is phenomenal as well, but now they actually have a quarterback. Like, it was crazy last year how Nebraska couldn't get to bowl eligibility because they were just turning over the ball in the most humiliating ways possible. And now you have a quarterback in Dylan Raiola who is like all that. Like, you look at future drafts, not this upcoming draft. I'm talking about drafts after that. Raiola is going to be a huge talking point. Arch Manning is going to be a huge talking point. And then also Nika Iamaliava is going to be a huge talking point as well. Like, those three quarterbacks, we've seen Nico play a good amount this year. Phenomenal. We've seen Dylan Raiola play a good amount this year. Phenomenal. And now we get to see more of Arch Manning against Louisiana Monroe, where he's going to get the start. And we saw what he was able to do last week as Quinn Ewers got hurt and the wheels and then the big arm as well. But those are three quarterbacks to really keep an eye on moving forward. But with that being said, I think Nebraska wins, but the Illini are getting disrespected a little bit heading into this one. Like, Kansas, I thought was going to be good this year in the Big 12. Like, they had expectations, Kansas. And to start the season, you look at the Jayhawks, who Illinois did beat Kansas. That's why I'm bringing them up. Kansas, they lost. They beat Lindenwood 48-3. They lose to Illinois, and then they lose to UNLV. And now you have a big game this weekend, Kansas and West Virginia, where both of those teams need a victory in the worst way. Because West Virginia got dismantled by Penn State to start the year. And then you thought the Eagles choked away a game. Maybe it's something in the water Pennsylvania, but Pittsburgh ended up completing the comeback. But where there's comebacks that do happen, where Philadelphia, they choked away a game up against the Atlanta Falcons. West Virginia, it was even worse in the backyard brawl, where Pitt was down like 10 with like 3:05 to play. And then West Virginia had that game won, and they ended up losing it. So that's a big game, Kansas, and this weekend going up against West Virginia. But Illinois beating Kansas in week two, that's a big win for them. So I think this is a game that both of these defenses keep it tight. I think it's close, but I'll take Nebraska to win the game, but I have the Illini to cover the 8.5. I could see this being 27-20, like right close on the number. Could be a little bit closer than that, like maybe 24-20. The thing to watch with Nebraska, too, so far this season, first half, awesome. Second half, little underwhelming. Like, they had only 10 points against UTEP in the first half. You look at, and they won that game 40-7. The Colorado game, they had no points in the second half. They won that game 28-10. The Northern Iowa game, even, they had 21 points at halftime. They only scored 13 points in the second half. So there has been differences with Nebraska first half to second half. I think Nebraska plays a more complete game, but the Illini are no slouch. I do believe that game is close, but Nebraska, they win. They just don't cover the spread. All righty, next game that we'll look to. We had Chris Plank on early. Does a great job on the Oklahoma Sooners radio network. I am really excited for Oklahoma and Tennessee. I know that we'll get into Michigan and USC in just a bit, and Utah and Oklahoma State, but the game I'm most excited for this weekend is Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ABC. It's Tennessee and Oklahoma. Oklahoma, just nationally, has not been discussed a lot this year. It seems like they're in the SEC now with Texas, but all we're doing is talking about Texas. Oklahoma smashed my alma mater to start the year 51-3. They beat Houston 16-12, close game. And then Tulane's been a solid program as of late. You beat them 34-19. This is a huge statement for Brent Venables. It's a huge statement for him, and he has his hands full up against Nico Iamaleava. And Tennessee, we all know the Josh Heupel story, won a national championship with Oklahoma as a player, and then as an offensive coordinator, ended up getting fired. So there's a test for both teams this week. I think it is better for college football if Tennessee wins this game this week. I don't think there's a loser for college football, but Tennessee is starting to look like a team that is humming. And we saw what they did a few years ago, and then you had the unfortunate injury to the quarterback, but we know what Heupel is capable of as a head coach. We saw at UCF, we saw a little bit at Tennessee as well, but this is a Tennessee squad where going into the year, I didn't know what to make out of them outside of the quarterback. We knew the quarterback was going to be great. You still look at the SEC pecking order, right? Georgia is better than Tennessee. You have Alabama better than Tennessee, Texas better than Tennessee. But the way that I've been saying this, and I've been saying it now for the last 2 weeks, Ole Miss, Missouri, Tennessee, who's the best between those three teams? I would say Tennessee is better than Ole Miss, and I would say Tennessee is better than Missouri. So I think this is a perfect litmus test for both these teams. Tennessee, even though you played NC State back in week two, and they were a top 25 team at the time, and Dorn's a very good coach. You know, no one's going to praise you for beating Chattanooga and Kent State 69-3 and 71-0. They will praise you for crushing and beating the brakes off NC State 51-10. But now you get your best competition. And for Oklahoma, you're solid. You're top 15. People haven't been giving you the credit that you probably want. Venables got us to make a big defensive statement as a head coach with the defensive mind that he has, going up against a fine offense with Josh Heupel and Nico Iamaleava. That's number two. Number three, talking about offense, Michigan. Can you have a pulse? Can you have a pulse this week up against USC? I'm not going to crush Michigan this year. They just won a national championship. We know what they lost in McCarthy and Corum, the members on the line, Mikey Sanders still on the defensive side of the ball, Chris Jenkins on the defensive side of the ball, Jim Harbaugh back in the NFL. But Michigan not utilizing the transfer portal in the transfer portal era to get a quarterback is a disgrace. Davis Warren, phenomenal story. I wish him nothing but the best. There's a reason why he's getting benched. I was shocked when I was in Vegas, and John Jansen, who does the games, told me he thinks Davis Warren's going to start and it wasn't going to be Alex Orji. Because all offseason long, It was Alex Orji this, Alex Orji that. He's going to be the guy. He could be the Jalen Milroe type of story this year in college football. And they don't trust him to throw. So if I'm Michigan this week, I say, F it. I was trying to figure out how I could say that. I would say, F it. I don't care that they're 2-1. I don't care that they got the snot beat out of them by Texas. USC coming to your place. Let Alex Orji be a dual threat quarterback this week. Because if you go in with this conservative game plan and you go in thinking, oh, this is Michigan against Penn State, let's say, from a year ago, where you knew you were just better and you could run and embarrass James Franklin, you're not going to win this game. You got to be creative. You got to empty the kitchen sink in this one to beat USC. And I'll give credit to USC. I thought USC going into the season was not going to be very good, but I thought they would overachieve because so many people were down on USC. This is a game for USC where, yes, you're 2-0. You beat LSU to start the season. Everyone's praising you out of the gate. Oh, Lincoln Riley. Oh, look at the Trojans of USC. Miller Moss. And look what he's been able to do. All that goes out the window. And you go back into that C, fraudulent kind of category if you lose to Michigan. They should beat Michigan this week. So I want to see the USC. Can you take care of business like Texas not only took care of business but dismantled Michigan? And Michigan, empty the kitchen sink this week up against the Trojans. So that's number three. Number four, I think the Big 12 is the toughest conference to predict in college football. Going into the year, you could legitimately make a case for like 6 to 8 teams to win the Big 12. There was a long list of teams that you could consider to win the Big 12. Two of those teams going in definitely were Utah and Oklahoma State. They will match up this weekend in Stillwater. You will have Kyle Whittingham up against Mike Gundy, two longtime coaches. I want to see where the health of Cam Rising is in this one. And also, I'll be curious to see if Ollie Gordon can get things going. We know what he was able to do a year ago for Oklahoma State, but he's been off to a slow start this season. Whoever wins this game, I'm not saying they are definitely going to win the Big 12 because that'd be crazy. Personally, my pick is Kansas State, but this is kind of a game of tug of war, and whoever wins this game then gets to go take the rope home, and then they are perceived to be the better team in this matchup between the Big 12. And you look at it for Oklahoma State, this is a tough stretch. You got Utah, and then you follow it up against Kansas State. And then Utah, who started the year off 3-0, they have Arizona next week, who Arizona got exposed a little bit by Kansas State last week, but we know Arizona has a very good offense as well. So who's better in the Big 12 between Oklahoma State and Utah? That's going to be something I want to watch coming up on Saturday. And then, finally, you know that we can't get through a segment without mentioning Arch Manning multiple times. I know it's Louisiana Monroe and Texas. That's the matchup. Texas is a 44-point favorite. The over-under is 52.5. So this is, right, like, could be a 51-53 kind of game. You know, Vegas is expecting Texas to cover the number, I would imagine. And then the over-under, I think, is the more interesting part in this one. Can I just ask a quick question here? And Stu, I don't know if you'll know this. I'm not expecting you to know this. But it is show related where there is a connection in this one to a friend, a dear friend of the show. Do you have any idea who the quarterback is at Louisiana Monroe? Any idea?
No clue.
No clue. I expected that. Manny Rodriguez, do you have any idea who the quarterback is at Louisiana Monroe?
It's not General Booty, is it?
It is General Booty. Josh wow. Booty, his nephew, General Booty, who when I first heard of General Booty and Josh was in studio with us, I don't know if you know this, Stu. I don't know if I said this on the air. I referred to him as Major Booty. And then when Josh corrected me and said his name is General, I go, oh, well, he probably gets some Major Booty on campus because he used to be at Oklahoma. So we got a matchup of football royalty. The Booty family against the Manning family. Both of those are very similar. So you have General Booty up against Arch Manning, but everyone wants to see how Arch will do. We know what we saw last week. I get it's up against Louisiana Monroe. The Louisiana Monroe coach went out of his way to say, hey, you know, we have guys that have defeated Arch Manning in the past going back to high school, so they're not afraid of him. The Arch Manning hype to me is going to be fascinating because Sark has done a great job in not having this hype overtake his team. Quinn Ewers has been really damn good, but Quinn Ewers gets hurt. So I don't think Quinn Ewers plays against Louisiana Monroe, obviously. He's not. It's Arch Manning. And then Mississippi State, I would be surprised as well. Then they have that game up against Oklahoma, and then the following week, Georgia. That's when Quinn Ewers is going to come back. But if Arch Manning is booming, right, if he gets a boom, a little AJ Big Justice style, and then Quinn Ewers comes back, and it's not that pretty, even though Quinn Ewers has done a phenomenal job, I'm not saying Quinn Ewers gets benched, but there is going to be a conversation because I know how this media game works. All right, those are the five things to watch out for this weekend in college football. What a name, by the way. General Booty. I actually think they should have named the kid Major Booty. Manny, that's just me.
Well, General isn't his government name, is it? That's his birth-given name, General?
I just know he's called General Booty. Why do you have to? You're like the Twitter troll.
I am. That's exactly. Well, you just called me a troll on social media. You say that all I do is troll on social media. You just said that last hour.
This can't be his real name.
It's General?
No, on Wikipedia.
I love that website.
It says General Maximus Axel Booty. You know what? I'm going to text Josh right now. Let's just see this.
Why don't you check? Why don't we check UL Monroe's?
Louisiana Monroe? Yeah. Josh, quick question. Is your nephew's legal name actually General, or is it a nickname?
It's got to be a nickname.
No, I think that's his actual name.
Oh.
I really do believe that. But, like, there's been people that have had the first name Major. Major Applewhite. He was a former coach. I don't know where he is now. I think he was at SMU. But that's why I probably got those confused. But that's why if I was the father, which I'm not, I would have gone with General Booty. I would have gone with Major Booty instead of General Booty. You're looking at this very quickly.
Yeah, I don't see anything on ULM's football page.
I think that's his legal name.
God bless.
His given name.
God bless.
General Booty.
The only reason I know that is because of college football as well. He actually transferred out of ULM in my, you know, fantasy world, mm-hmm. in my video game. So that's how I knew that General Booty was a quarterback,
oh, really?
At ULM because of college football 25.
That's why NIL should be here. A kid like that, great for NIL, obviously. All righty, this is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's get to General Manny Rodriguez.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by Sleeper. Just download the Sleeper app today and use code BLOCK when signing up. Must be present in certain states. Visit sleeper.com for details. Sponsored by Blitz Studios. Let's start off with the Jets, 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 Jets. They dismantled my Patriots last night. Here is Aaron Rodgers on his strong game up against New England, courtesy of our friends at Amazon Prime Video.
I felt pretty good tonight. I was doing some things I did as a younger man. So I've said that, you know, as the games go on, I'm going to feel more comfortable moving around a little bit. And there were a couple times where I needed to extend plays. And the line did a good job holding up. I extended, you know, hit some conk a couple, you know, one to Allen to kind of keep drives going.
And I thought the legs were the biggest part in the game for Aaron Rodgers. There was a lot to be encouraged by if you're a Jet fan, but you know that this season, a big chunk of it is all on Aaron. And for him, three games back from the Achilles injury that knocked him out all last season, the first two games you didn't really see his mobility tested. You saw that last night, and you factored it in him completing 77% of his passes. Stellar performance by Aaron Rodgers. Now, sometimes you're at a game, Stu, and there's things that are happening. But since you're at the game, you can't see them on the TV broadcast. So last night, about 10 Jets players' wives were sitting in front of me. And I see them passing their phones around saying, did you see this? Did you see this? Did you see this? Like down the aisle with the Jets' wives. And it was Aaron Rodgers running over to the sideline. And Salah like goes to give him a hug. and Rodgers shoves him away and then daps up everybody else. So that started to make its way throughout the stadium, even though at the time everyone could have seen it, but you're like not looking for that. And it was broadcasted on TV or Amazon Prime, however you want to refer to that these days. Here is Robert Saleh on his version of the awkward exchange with Aaron Rodgers.
What happened in the second quarter? Looked like you went up and tried to give Aaron Rodgers a hug there.
Oh.
You know, part of the things that we've been talking about is to just get the defense a two-score lead. And it was a two-score lead, so yeah, I guess it was he just wanted to see something on defense. So
he just reminded me that he
got a two-score lead.
So that is the Saleh side. Here is the Aaron Rodgers version of it.
There was that awkward exchange with you and Robert. You appeared to like push him away.
Well, awkward? No, it was not really awkward at all.
You appeared to push him away then when he went to hug you. What happened?
I didn't know. He's not a big hugger. Usually, so I didn't know he was going for the hug. He likes to do the two-hand chest push as well. So, but he talks a lot about two-score leads. So I just kind of gave him a push and said, two-score lead. That's what happened.
I remember a few years ago, Jeff McNeil and Francisco Lindor got into it, and they got into a fight. Well, you couldn't see the fight. It was in the tunnel leading into the dugout. But you knew that there was a contentious situation. And then afterwards, they were talking like they were arguing over it was a rat or a raccoon that made its way into the tunnel. It was such a stupid, contrived story, right? In this case, it looked bad, Stu. Like, when you saw that last night, you were like, ooh, yeah, those guys don't like each other. What, yeah, are they fighting like, over the Egypt situation?
I was like, what is this? Like, they are not happy. Or Rodgers is not happy.
But I do think after hearing the explanation, and sometimes people give you an explanation and it's bull belief, but I believe the explanation because if Saleh's big message is just get the defense a two-score lead, get defense two-score lead, that's like, hey, Aaron, go do your bleeping job. Go do what we brought you here. And then he did that, and he, like, shoved Saleh in a fun way and was like, two-score lead, two-score lead. That's what I thought that was. So it looked like something, but I don't think it was really something. Let's go to Jerod Mayo. Coach, I'm upset with you. There was no reason to put Drake May in that game last night. So Jerod Mayo, why would you put Drake May in behind an offensive line that is horrible?
In the second half, I felt like our offensive line, they just weren't blocking the way they did at earlier parts of the game. It definitely was something that I thought of personally, but at the same time, I thought it was too good of an opportunity for him to go out there and get some experience.
Stu, I'm confused. So he said the offensive line was blocking differently in the second half, right?
It did sound like that, yes.
So you would infer that he thought the offensive line got better, right?
Yes.
But then he says, but it was too good of an opportunity, so it makes it sound like he didn't really care what the offensive line looked like. It was just like, oh, we're going to throw him out there because it was too good of an opportunity late in the game to just get in some action. I thought that was very ambiguous. Like, you would think, okay, the offensive line looks better, so I'll throw him out there. But, hey, coach, what game are you watching? Because if you were a defensive player last night and you saw that offensive line, you would have been in the backfield all night long because your offensive line sucked. It was embarrassing. Oh, Jerod, what are we doing? So would Jerod Mayo moving forward make a change at quarterback? Listen up.
I don't know. Look, we talk about every single week, you know, you're competing for a job. So we'll get together as a coaching staff and see where it goes.
Can he just start going Belichick?
You know what, dude? It's in the best interest of the team.
That's all you got to say. And why'd you put Drake May out there?
You do what's in the best interest of the team.
Just short and sweet. Short and sweet, Jerod. Okay. Let's go to Tyreek Hill. His update on Tua Tagovailoa.
He's doing amazing, man. How the locker room doing? You know, the biggest thing that we want is to make sure that, you know, Tua's all right. And once I called him, you know, the day after or whatever, you know, I heard his voice, you know, heard he was in good spirits. I was cool, man. You know what I'm saying? Because to me, like, bigger than football, man. Like, our life is bigger than football. Like, we also, like, individuals with families and, you know, we got stuff going on. So once I heard that, it's cool, man.
And I did see that Tua is actually going to go with the team to Seattle. So they're going to fly him out to Seattle this weekend, even though obviously he's not playing on IR right now. Here's Steve Sarkisian, the coach of Texas. When Quinn Ewers is healthy, will he start?
I think we have a national championship caliber team, and he's the quarterback of that team. And I think we still have that in front of us to go do that. I think with some of the games that we have coming up down the road. This guy's going to be in New York for the Heisman, and whether he wins it or not, but he has the ability to do that. And I think he has the ability to be a top five NFL draft pick. So all the things that I think he's capable of are still out there for him. And this Saturday, him not playing in this game this Saturday, is not going to impact those three things that I know are goals that we've set for him and that he's working toward.
Yeah, I'm with Coach on that one. The only thing is, when Quinn comes back, he deserves to start. But if he struggles, then the conversation will be there about Arch Manning. Stu, Shohei Ohtani had a sensational night last night. The greatest performance I've ever seen on a baseball field. Just give me the two home run cuts. You go back to back. Here's the 50th and here's the 51st home run on the Dodgers Radio Network. Tim Nevert.
And the pitch coming to Shohei Ohtani. He swings, hits a drive to left. This ball's back. There it is. Number 50. The first player in the history of Major League Baseball to have a 50-50 season. He is incredible. Here's the pitch. Swing and a drive, deep right field. He has done it. It's the first time Ohtani in his career has had a three-home run game. Can you believe this? 10 runs batted in for Ohtani. That's also a career high. 51 home runs for Shohei Ohtani. This is the show that never ends. Can you believe this man?
6 for 6 last night. 3 home runs, 2 doubles, a single, 10 runs batted in, 4 runs scored, 2 stolen bases, and he becomes the first player ever to reach the 50-50 club, 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases. And he's not even pitching yet. And I know he's been thrown a little bit, but there's also that facet of the game. I've never seen anything like this. But I've been told what Babe Ruth was. This is Babe Ruth, right? And this will be told for years and years to come. It is the Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network.